I mean, the other side could be dirt.
Pardon me, is this a neighborhood watch meeting?
Oh, hiya, Vision. Didn't expect to see you here. This is sort of a members-only type deal.
Ah, certainly. Right. Well, I'll just stay here and be as quiet as a church mouse till you open up the floor for new business.
Well, in truth, we were just getting to new business.
Oh, splendid. Could you tell me how often you rotate security patrols? Do you interface directly with local law enforcement? What are your protocols regarding threats such as burglary, graffiti, and reckless driving?
No, Vision.
I know these are indeed grave matters.
New business actually means another round of Danish.
Raspberry or cheese-filled?
Oh, neither for me, thank you. I don't eat food.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Subbeacon. I'm your host, JVL, along with Sunny Bunch and Victorino Mattis. Just a reminder, the Subbeacon is available exclusively on Patreon at subbeacon.com. We also have a store where you can buy Subbeacon merchandise ranging from onesies to headache shirts. Visit tpublic.com and search Subbeacon. You'll easily find us. Please buy shirts, tell your friends to subscribe, and leave us reviews, suggestions, bad ideas at subbeacon.com. Sunny, how are you?
I'm good. I'm currently in the process of totally soundproofing this room that you see me in. You know, we were doing a little bit of construction, and I've got a small office space that's really only useful as a podcast studio / book depository. And so I'm now investing every week in more and more foam.
I was going to say, are you egg crating? You're egg crating the room?
I'm putting foam all over. And I was wondering, I was curious, as homeowners yourselves and serious podcasting forces, serious forces in the world of podcasting, how much value would you put on a podcasting room if you were looking to buy a house? You know, because every house has bathrooms and walk-in closets. Right. But if you came across a house and you're like, oh, a podcast studio... That's worth at least $20,000 or $30,000 more.
So, for example, if you were selling your house,
right,
and you had like an open house where people get to, you know, like clients and whatnot, or prospective buyers, you think that if they saw the room with the foam around it, they'd be like, oh yeah. Oh, I wasn't sure. I was on the fence, but now that I see he has a podcast room.
Well, obviously you would have to sell it as a podcast studio and not as a like sex dungeon or
with foam so nobody can hear your screams.
Insane, yeah. Asylum mock-up to keep the crazy people inside. You know, you'd have to be searching for a very specific kind of clientele. And I honestly think it would be a big value add. To a house.
Well, especially since everybody has a podcast now.
Everyone's got a podcast now. We're all working from home. We've all got our little studios.
You laugh, Sonny, but in the current climate, I don't know what real estate is like down in Tejas, but in Washington, D.C. area, we are in this insane place, and I know this because my sister is trying to buy a house, where prices go up every single week. Houses are listed on a Thursday, there's an open house on a Saturday, and then offers are taken on Monday morning. Nobody does inspections anymore.
Yeah.
The offers are all cash.
Like it's 2004.
Like it's 2004. And if you don't go a minimum of 10% above the list price, you don't even have a prayer.
That's right. Yeah.
Which seems totally sustainable, because what I have taken away from the last year is that the economy is red hot and people are just drowning in money because they're just working all the time.
Well,
and
here they are.
It's great.
Here they are. And again, two words that I hadn't heard in a while, I'm hearing again when I talk to people, and that is escalation clause.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, escalation clause.
Well, so when we sold our house in Virginia, I mean, we sold our house a year ago. So this is like, you know, this is not in the current exceptionally hot market, which it seems still to be. The people that ended up getting our house had an escalation clause in their offer, and it mm-hmm. really made my whole year that little bonus.
Well,
verbiage.
Bidding war. I would just like to. People tend to think that things always go up. We bought our first house at the peak of the bubble, like 8 months before the crash. That was a genius move. We escalation clause and all those things. We held it for 8 years, and when we sold it after 8 years, we had only lost 30%.
Oof.
Ooh.
So these things can, you know, they can take a long time to come back.
Yeah, it depends where and what, I think.
Well, this was Old Town Alexandria. This was, yeah. you know, yeah, the ritziest, fanciest place mm-hmm. in the world.
I do think that, well, I mean, who knows? I think everything comes down again. But the market has been insane. So
gone up every year since we bought it in 2006. There hasn't been a dip.
I kind of want to put my house on the market just to see what sort of a bonus I would get for my podcast room.
Well, that's what I'm saying. My point in all of this, Sonny, was that in this climate where everybody's working from home and Zooming, I actually think the podcast room is at least as valuable as, say, an outdoor hot tub.
Ooh. not an outdoor pool.
What is the difference between hot tub and jacuzzi? What is the hot? Is a jacuzzi just is that just an old person's thing and no one calls it that anymore?
No.
Or is jacuzzi very specific?
Well, jacuzzi is a brand name.
Oh, of a hot tub.
Right. I mean, but I think jacuzzi connotes jets.
Oh, okay.
Both hot water and jets. Oh, but when people say hot tubs, they mean jets. Like, they don't just mean it's like a pot of boiling water.
No. You got to have the jets.
In.
You got to have the jets.
Yeah.
Because you could sit on it.
Oh, boy.
It's great because you can't actually see me on this particular episode.
Sadly, we've lost Vic. I'm expecting Vic to pull like a piece of tape off his camera midway through the show
Fooled you all.
With his vision cosplay.
Victorino, how are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. It was Kate's birthday earlier in the week, and
speaking of jacuzzis,
we got together with some friends on Saturday night, and I gave her what I consider to be the greatest gift I could possibly give her.
Oh boy.
Designated
Sonny,
driver.
What time is it?
designated driver. That was my gift.
Oh.
You made her the designated driver?
Yeah, you let her drive home?
I'm confused.
One night a year, I will be the responsible one. And
by that, you mean you'll only have like three drinks.
That's right.
Sorry, how's that a present for her?
Well, she can drink.
One night a year, you'll take your wife out and get her drunk so you can then bring her home and have your way with her? Yeah, no, that's happy birthday, Kate.
And when she gets home, then it's just pass out time, which is perfect for me. No, I'm just kidding. I had to temper myself. I'm like, okay.
She wakes up, why am I wearing a Hogwarts skirt?
That's right. Hufflepuff. Okay. Anyway, that was my gift is being that.
That's wonderful. Yeah, where did you guys go?
Did you go
to the Palm?
No. We went to visit friends. We always see the McCormicks because John has the same birthday as my wife.
Hey.
So we always do a joint birthday, and with Lauren and me there, we swap gifts. Again, it's great because you can't actually see me. I can only see your reactions. This is great.
Careful.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, no, it's really nice.
It's a good thing Andrew Egger doesn't have the same birthday as Kate, too.
Things will get interesting. Okay, so there you go. Oh, hey, wow. Wow, you're going to have to... I just put that together.
Yeah, you like that? Took a minute.
Well, that can be arranged. Okay, thank you. Let's move on because this is not going well. Okay.
All right. Well, I would like to tell you people.
Yeah, JVL, what's going on?
I got a number of texts and emails over this past week agreeing that the Godfather 3 version of Sofia Coppola was a smoke show, a prime piece of gabagool, a slice of prosciutto, the type of girl you meet at the Bridgewater Commons and then take her to the Rainforest Cafe for dessert. Oofa! The more
I
thought about it.
I don't understand any of those references.
The more I realized that Sofia Coppola was an absolute vision. Speaking of visions.
Wow. Hey, A+.
This week we're talking about the new Marvel series, WandaVision, which is a terrible name. And I am interested in Sonny's attempt at a big boy review.
Hmm. It's not actually too hard to give a big boy review, except for the fact that we've only seen two episodes, and I have thoughts about the tendency of critics to review television shows after 2 to 3 episodes. Mm-hmm. We can get into that in a bit. But the show is essentially a parody or a pastiche of 1950s and 1960s sitcoms. The idea being that every episode is parodying a new show, to the point where they actually did unique titles and theme songs for every episode in the season, which we will see as the show goes along. But each episode is a parody or a kind of pastiche of these specific areas. It stars the show's star. Vision, who is played by Paul Bettany and is a android capable of shifting his mass and all sorts, and he can lift Thor's hammer. Those are the only things I remember about Vision. The Scarlet Witch, Wanda Maximoff, who is played by Elizabeth Olsen. They are playing kind of standard 1950s, 1960s sitcoms roles. They are the new couple and fish out of water, and they're trying to figure out how to make sense of this crazy world that they find themselves in. It is that, and it is also a Lost-style puzzle box, a Twin Peaks-style, or at least as Twin Peaks-y as a Marvel product can get, which is to say not very. It's more Lost. A sort of puzzle box type show where we are trying to figure out why Wanda Maximoff and the Vision are stuck in this weird alternate reality where somebody is watching them on TV as they progress through their lives and apparently have children in forthcoming episodes. The show itself, I don't think would work on either of these levels separately. I don't think that the parody is funny enough to work on its own, even though it is occasionally quite amusing. And I don't think that the mystery box aspect of it is nearly sophisticated enough to keep our attention or our interest. It is teasing just enough to make me not want to turn it off. It's good. It's good is my big boy review. I enjoy it. I enjoy it on a couple different levels, despite the fact that I don't think it works on either of the levels really that it's trying to work on. And the reason it works is because Paul Bettany is so funny. Paul Bettany is exceptionally funny. Elizabeth Olsen is exceptionally funny. There's this great supporting cast, which includes one of my all-time favorite character actors, Fred Melamed, who people will remember as Cy Abelman in A Serious Man if they're one of the hundreds of people who have seen A Serious Man.
Is that the boss?
Yeah, that's the boss from the first episode. That's the boss from the first episode. He's also
Mr. Hart.
Yes, Mr. Hart. He's also in every S. Craig Zahler movie, which is funny in and of itself, but that's neither here nor there. My short big boy review is that I like it, actually. I think it's actually funny and charming, and the performances are very winning. It's a nice relatively short show. It's 25 minutes sans credits. The credits go on for like 6 or 7 minutes. You can safely skip them. There are no bonus little sneaks that you're missing out on. And it's fun and it's nice and it's neat and it's cute and the other thing I had not realized how much I was missing the Marvel Cinematic Universe in my life, and it is a little bit of normalcy after 12 months of lockdown or whatever we're in right
without
now.
Without a Marvel movie.
It's been 18 it's been 18 no it's been almost 20 months since the last Spider-Man movie.
Yeah.
I guess 18 months. We are ending a drought of Marvel stuff. And it's funny, on the other podcast, one of the other podcasts I do, one of the many podcasts that I do, I joke that, we were talking about this being the first MCU TV show, which it actually is not.
No.
All of those Netflix shows were also MCU.
Yes. Jessica Jones.
Series. Kind of,
Luke
except
Cage,
they never
Daredevil.
They yeah. never really interacted with the MCU in a serious way. They were their own little self-contained universe.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Which
was on ABC.
That's true. Right. There's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. too.
And which I believe is canon.
I don't know. So
Vic, I have a question for you.
JVL.
Did you understand it?
Yeah, I mean, I did some cheating, so I know that, I mean, obviously, I remembered he died, so clearly she has created some sort of a universe.
Did you cheat before or after you watched it?
Before. No,
because I would have paid money to watch you coming to that 100% cold.
Oh,
because wow. We would have gotten the classic,
what happened? I don't think so. I do remember, obviously, that he died, right? Because he got the stone ripped out of his head.
He dies twice. He dies twice in Infinity War.
Does
first,
he really?
First, Wanda kills him, and then Thanos brings him back to life with the time stone and kills
him again.
And then
rips the thing out. Right, okay. Oh. So I understand what she's trying to do in her own little world. So she's living in a universe. The question is, who's trying to reach her? Because you hear this voice. It sounds like Captain America's voice, but I'm sure it's not, where they're trying to reach her. And there is a moment where, you know, this beekeeper comes out of a manhole and she just says no. And then she rewinds and it's back to where it is. But she seems to be very comfortable in her sitcom world based on her knowledge of sitcoms, I guess. I don't know. So that I got. I think their home changed from episodes 1 to 2, even though it's black and white and then partly black and white. And episode 2 is more of a Bewitched theme. So I think it helped that I watched a gazillion sitcoms growing up so that I felt very comfortable in that way. The writing and the plot, and I mean, it's very, it's just very classic sitcom of that time plot. But obviously, they're acting. They're both acting, and she's acting in this way because they're missing information, or they made themselves forget that there's this other world. So where is she right now? You know, I have no idea. But in her mind, this is what we're in her mind. That's what I think, JVL.
You really? I'm impressed. I'm impressed. I love the crap out of this thing.
Okay, good. I found the first episode to be so-so. I really like the second episode.
The magic show in the second episode,
yes,
is really funny.
Very funny.
Yes.
So, there's an aspect of Lost, but it is, you know, it's more Bewitched meets Twilight Zone.
Mm-hmm. You know what else
than
it meets?
Lost, even.
It also meets Pleasantville.
Pleasantville, yeah. You know, with I Dream of Jeannie and also some Lost thrown in. I really like that it's full of Easter eggs, but they're really all throwaways. You know, the Stark toasters and the Strucker watches and the Wentworth department store. Those really are just little bits of fan service.
I didn't get the Wentworth department store. What is that?
Yeah, Wentworth is a super villainous who is... Oh. Blah, blah, blah. Okay. You don't need to.
The Hydra watch I got.
Yeah, well, that's Baron von Strucker.
Right.
What I like, so I have not seen Elizabeth Olsen in anything I can remember other than the Marvel movies. Mm. I really like the character of Scarlet Witch from the comics a great deal. I think it's a very interesting character. And I have hated everything that she has done with the character to this point. Nails on a chalkboard. It pissed me off watching her. And she is revelatory in this. She's just great. And she gets the character right. She gets all of the sitcom acting right.
Yeah, like it's a specific kind. And, you know, she comes from a family of professional sitcom actors.
And the writing is great. Paul Bettany is great. Because it does this thing where it is both a sitcom and a parody of the sitcom. So, you know, so what sitcoms do is you're supposed to have a laugh on every page, right? Every page of dialogue has to have a joke on it. You have to have callbacks. I mean, there are formulaic aspects to the sitcom. And this does all of those. But it pays them off as often as not as meta jokes about the sitcom itself. Like, for instance, the callback they do with the lobster in the first episode, right? The lobster gets thrown out and then the lobster shows up as the door knocker, which is funny in a certain absurdist sense, but is then even funnier as an absurdist. Of course, this is the sitcom. This right. is how the foreign right. works.
Right. And you need to have the laugh track.
Yeah, the laugh track is fantastic. The theme song is done by the Lopez family,
yes.
Who did the Frozen. I don't know. I just loved every damn thing about it, and I really like how dark it is when, in the first episode, she makes Mr. Hart start to choke to death because he's asking questions that are making her uncomfortable.
Does she make
I didn't realize that.
Not, oh, yeah.
I thought he just choked.
No.
I just thought he choked.
No, she makes him choke.
Really? And the other thing is, and as you notice, Deborah Jo Rupp, the great character actress who plays the wife.
The wife, oh yeah, from That 70s Show,
yes.
right?
Yeah. She is locked into a dialogue where she just repeats the same line over and over. She can't break out of her character when that's happening.
So, Vic, I know the answer to this question is no for you. Sonny, did you read House of M?
No, I didn't. That's okay, after my time.
So Marvel does, you know, once a year, Marvel does, like everybody else, a miniseries, which is a large comic book universe event, which then shifts the plot for not MCU, but the comics universe in a particular direction for a year or so. And House of M is a Scarlet Witch-centric event from, God, it's got to be 15 years ago. But the idea of it is this. So Scarlet Witch, whose powers have always been terribly portrayed on screen, right? In all the Avengers movies, she shoots stuff. She shoots red beams out of her hands. It's like the stupidest fucking thing. But what the Scarlet Witch's power is to alter reality, right? And in the House of M series, she is going crazy because she's a mutant, and having the power to alter reality has made her have a total psychic break. And Charles and her father, Magneto, are trying to figure out what to do with her. And Charles comes, upon realizing that he can no longer control her, Charles comes back to New York to Avengers Tower. He brings the Avengers and the X-Men together and says, we got to figure out what to do with her. And Emma Frost, one of my favorite characters, says, well, we got to put her down. So it's just like this big fight, and so like Wolverine is like, yeah, let's just go kill her. And so they go to kill her, and when they get there, she's gone, and she has changed the world by altering the world so that mutants are in control of everything. And she alters the fabric of all reality, thinking that this will save her, right? If she could just, mutants can be in charge of everything. And only slowly, brick by brick, does this alternate reality come apart. And I think Spider-Man is the first one to figure out, wait a minute, something's wrong. Because most everybody in the alternate reality she's constructed, it's like the Matrix. Everybody has gotten what they want. Everybody has a good life, and they don't want to realize that this thing is fake. And at the end of it, as this thing is being pulled apart brick by brick, she goes in the opposite direction. And she, right before she is killed, she says, no more mutants. And this sets in part the next, the next year of Marvel content where there were no more mutants. I mean, the point is, there is a House of M thing going on with this story. And it is not clear to me. I don't think this is No More Mutants, but I think it's possible this is the beginning of what will eventually be Avengers versus X-Men, which is, I think, the phase four of Marvel. Because clearly there is an alternate reality that she has set up, whether by accident or on purpose, to keep her husband alive, and the two of them are in this alternate reality together. And it is likely to have consequences, but I love it. Anybody who is listening to this who has not read House of M, run, don't walk. I think you can read it for free on Amazon Prime. I think it is a Kindle. The Kindle version of it that you can just download to your iPad is faux free on Amazon Prime. So go do it.
Thank goodness you can't see me, because I was actually sleeping during the last
15 minutes. Oh, stop.
Question, JVL, my understanding, though, was that to get Wanda Maximoff into the MCU, she had to not be a mutant.
Yes. No. I thought that.
No.
I'm pretty sure.
Because the two mutants who have always been part of the Avengers...
Right. I understand.
She and Quicksilver,
right,
her brother.
I understand that, except for the fact that the way they gave Quicksilver and Wanda Maximoff her powers, it's explained in the movies, right? It's like experiments by Baron Zemo or somebody.
Right.
So my point is, she's not actually a mutant.
The twins.
Yeah, I mean, I guess she's not.
You could probably. I'm sure you can retcon all of this with a line of dialogue in a movie or whatever.
But. One of my in the Marvel Ultimate Universe, which was a totally separate universe that Marvel stood up. Did you ever read the Ultimates?
No, I
don't. Sonny?
No.
Wanda Maximoff and her brother Pietro are basically doing it, and it is creepy as shit. And it's awesome. It's Mark Millar, I think, who comes up with that take on the character. Anyway, it's just great. It's great. Go read House of M, everybody.
It's for Godfather 3 of them.
I don't have a ton of thoughts on this, except for the fact that the problem with the Scarlet Witch character, to my mind, has always been the basic problem of magic in any medium, which is that once you can do anything, there's no point to the character. And this is I don't understand what her actual powers are in the Marvel universe.
I was about that. That's part of my question. I actually wrote down question.
It just doesn't make any sense. She just shoots sparkly light.
Oh, you know what, JVL, Elizabeth Olsen has a small part in I really like this movie. It's extremely dark, but Wind River, with Jeremy Renner.
And
John Bernthal's in it too.
Is her part on Daily Motion?
There's a part where she changes from one outfit to another, and it is amazing.
Oh.
I love Elizabeth Olsen. Ask me, how much do I love her?
How much do you love her, Victorina?
I love her so much. I want to go Army Hammer on her.
That's a cannibalism joke for everyone.
That's a cannibal. No. Jamie, you probably missed this with the stories about it. Never mind. Okay, it's a joke. I actually don't.
Okay.
Come on. I'm not a cannibal. Just want a little bite. Just a little bite. Just a little. Okay. She's great. She's wonderful. That was my question. What are their powers? Because it's like between the two of them, they can pretty much do anything. It's like Elizabeth Montgomery and Bewitched. Just or Jean. Just make things happen. Okay. So fine. But I don't find it too bothersome, except for that they can just do things.
And that's why it's actually kind of funny in the Bewitched parody because she's just doing things. That actually makes and it's funny also because the stakes are so low. It's not like she's altering the fabric of reality to save the world from invasion of aliens, right? It's like she's altering the fabric of reality to make sure that nobody can tell that her husband is a drunk.
He's doing magic.
That's right.
Well, and is doing magic.
Is doing actual magic.
Yeah. That's the real funny in that.
Yes,
is that
exactly.
All the magic is being done to prevent people from understanding that there's magic being done.
And once you realize that, the effect of having gum inside his system is basically that he's drunk, which is great.
That's great.
Then
the cartoon cutaway of what his internals
look like.
It's
perfect. And hysterical. And then the audience, or at least I got into, how is she going to get him out of this mess? Oh, he's flying. Yeah. Oh, he's doing that. That's great. Okay. So I like
Wasn't
that.
Wasn't there an episode where Darren was drunk?
I don't know.
I feel like Darren got drunk once for some important meeting.
And then suddenly he
by
was
accident.
Suddenly he was no longer Darren, right? It was Dick Sargent, and then he became Dick York. The other question I had, did you understand the helicopter?
No.
No, you didn't. Okay. Wow. I thought I'd be surprised. Oh, you must be.
Well, I mean, that's part of the puzzle box.
The beekeeper, and they have the same insignia, but that's not an insignia neither of you recognize.
Oh, I didn't notice the insignia.
Sword.
S-W-O-R-D. Oh, well, I know all about sword.
Is that the Scarlet Witch something?
No.
Something?
Sword is the alien version of S.H.I.E.L.D. So S.H.I.E.L.D. is like.
So
MI5 and MI6.
Ooh.
No. So it is the sword is the companion to S.H.I.E.L.D., where it is run, out of the Earthlings to protect us from all the crazy ass people in space. So to protect us from the Krees and the Skrulls and all those.
Like the Men in Black.
Yeah, in that way. And Abigail, okay. God, what is the class? So the sword was invented, I believe, by Joss Whedon in his Astonishing X-Men run.
Wow.
And I'm trying to remember the name of the agent, Abigail something, but he sort of created the character out of whole cloth. And
is this who Catherine Hahn is?
Yes, I was going to say.
Who's Catherine Hahn?
The neighbor.
The neighbor. Comedian.
I doubt it, but maybe, who knows? We'll find out. It's interesting. I didn't see the sword logo.
I'm pretty sure it was sword. I might be misremembering. I don't know.
That's what I got for you.
Yeah. All right. So the other thing we wanted to do with this episode was talk about sitcoms, because WandaVision is at heart a sitcom, and I thought we should do a bunch of rankings. Maybe I'm Ron Burgundy?
Question mark. Sure. Hey guys, this is Sonny. I am cutting off this episode, this free episode that is on the iTunes feed. If you want to hear the rankings of sitcoms, and trust me, you guys want to hear the rankings of sitcoms. I was not expecting Vic to go there. JVL calling my list terrible, I was not shocked by, but I was not expecting Vic to go to the dark place he took it to. If you want to listen to that, you got to sign up for the Patreon. Sorry, I'm trying to get us to 1,500, and we're very close. We're at 1,485 members right now, and if we get to that 1,500 mark, JVL will stop beating me. So if you want to listen to the rest of this show, please sign up at subbeacon.com. It's well worth the as little as $1 per month. It's not expensive, guys. You can afford it. And if you have technical questions about Patreon, let me know and I will walk you through it. Just shoot me a text message on the interwebs and I'll get now. Just go to subbeacon.com and sign up, and then there's a whole message board there. I'll walk you through it. Very easy. You can send us messages. You can interact directly with us. It's very, very nice. But if you want to hear the sitcom rankings, you gotta sign up. All right. Let's go to the outro now.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Again, Sonny, you have no idea what you missed. This is what you don't understand.
You know what else
being
was
a millennial
dark was the end of Dinosaurs, which had the end of the world.
Was it the meteor?
The meteor came and it was the end of the world.
That was very dark.
Oh, that's funny. All right, Spirit of the Week. I think, Sonny, you're the only person drinking.
Yeah.
That sounds about right. I'm drinking Kaiō whiskey.
Japanese.
Oh.
Whiskey, which I quite enjoy. I don't know if it's Kaiō or Kaiō. I don't Kaiō.
Can you do it with the accent?
Kaiō.
No, that was very subtle of you. I got, for Christmas, I got Hatozaki.
Ooh.
Yes.
I don't know that one.
Yeah, no, I believe it's a relative of Hattori Hanza. It's a very nice whiskey, Hatozaki.
Yeah, I really like the Kaiō. I don't drink a ton of Japanese whiskey. It's the only bottle I get because
of the price.
It's relatively affordable. Oh. I think this is like $40 a bottle.
Is Japanese whiskey amazingly good? Because yes. I would assume that, they perfect it.
That's
the Japanese watch.
That's
right.
I would say I prefer Japanese whiskey to Scottish scotch.
Wow.
I do not prefer Japanese whiskey to American bourbon. It's a different.
If you're comparing
Scotch
to Japanese, what happened was like in the early 1900s, the first Japanese distiller had actually come from Scotland. I mean, he learned the trade in Scotland,
right.
And he actually brought home a Scottish wife, which was kind of a big deal back in the day. And of course, he made his distillery, I believe, like an exact replica, to the square ridge.
Very on brand.
Yes.
Is Suntory a real whiskey?
They have products underneath it, so it's like an umbrella, I think. So, I mean, Suntory.
So you could get a bottle of Suntory for a good time at Suntory time.
Yeah,
because that's what I want.
Suntory.
I don't think Suntory. Too often in America, like the actual Suntory whiskey. But
I've seen the Tokai.
But I think don't they own Jim Beam now?
Yeah, yeah, Beam Suntory. Yeah, that's right.
No, I want a bottle of Suntory whiskey. That's what I want. All right. Any corrections, additions, shout outs?
A listener friend gave us a little revelation about which friend was it, though? I can't remember anymore. Was it Stephen Philippi or was it somebody else who was telling us? Or was it.
We're talking about Godfather Part 3.
Yes, Adam Novak.
Oh, it was Adam. Yeah. The
disjointed scene involving the apartment at Vincent's with Bridget Fonda. We were correct to notice how off it seemed because, in fact, there was a separate screenplay that was written with that particular scene in mind, and they kept that part. Adam has a better explanation of it. But.
Yeah, but it was the only thing.
Yes.
It was a whole separate screenplay, and they threw out the whole thing and kept
it. You know, he put it in the comments of our Patreon. Yeah, so if you go to subbeacon.com, go to the Godfather Part 3
episode. What that smells of to me, that story smells of a favor to the writer of the original screenplay, holding on to a scene so that it satisfies some guild rule. In order for him to get some percentage of something or credit somewhere somehow.
That's interesting.
Yeah. All right. Well, I would say this. I this week have been feeling particularly grateful, and I am super duper grateful for all the people who have come and subscribed to the show, which has been beyond my wildest dreams. I am shocked that there are more than 10 people who wanted to hear our nonsense, and so I'm deeply and sincerely grateful to all you guys for supporting us and for listening to the show and hanging out with us for year six?
Yeah, and
it's crazy.
You know, do you remember?
It's crazy.
I said, no, we started in October of
Rogue
2016.
One was our first.
We started
big
October
episode.
2016. So yeah.
Yeah,
I remember thinking when right before we started. Oh, what did we say? If we could get 50 of our friends to listen, that would be fine.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. No, I'm all done crying this week, so I won't do any more tears now.
I just want to do a quick correction. The only writing credits on Godfather Part 3 are Mario Puzo and Francis Ford Coppola.
Oh.
So
no, but maybe it wasn't that then. All right. That's all the time we're giving you this episode. Questions, comments, complaints, compliments, tweet us at Sunny Bunch, at Victorino Mattis.
At JV Last, he's back. On Twitter. He's there all the time. He's tweeting.
That's not true. I am done saving our democracy, and so I'm back off of Twitter. Leave a comment at subbeacon.com.
Still there.
We're there. Tell your friends. Until next time. Victorino.
Yes.
Have you noticed the very subtle way in which I have taken your script and adhered perfectectly faithfully to all of your tones and inflections for several weeks, but then gradually backed off of that until now it is no longer you. Now it's just me. I didn't want to be me right off the bat because I knew people would.
When you take over anything, you give it you give a little transition there. It's like
got to kick the tires and see what works.
That's right. It was so subtle, JVL. I didn't even notice. You see?
Yeah, I've made it my own, but I had to do it slowly out of respect. Respect for the master.
Respect.
Gabagool. What do you guys have? Somebody's got to have something.
I got nothing.
I'm excited to announce that at one of my New Year's resolutions at the end of 2019. Was that I was going to finally finish The Guns of August by Barbara Tuchman, which I started in 1992 in sophomore year in college, 93.
Is that a book?
Yes. And shockingly, but it's like it's like almost 500 pages.
Almost 500 pages?
Yeah, it is like small print. And I have to tell you, I am less than 100 pages away. And if you read the book, don't tell me how it ends.
In 27 years, you've made 80% progress.
Yes, so you should average it out to how many pages a day that would come to. I have to also say it's just dense.
There's something dense. And,
thank you. I'm just really excited because with 80 pages left, the Germans are about 16 miles away from Paris. And I think, I think I know how this is going to end. So.
Well, they're going to take it.
So hold on. You should not finish it though.
Right.
It's been 27 years.
You should wait
to finish it on the 30th anniversary of beginning it. Don't go blowing through it now.
Wait
till 2022 to finish it.
Now done.
Just read a page a week.
Well, I am not.
Read one page per week.
I read it to fall asleep. So I get into bed and then I'll read a page and I'll try to make it to turn the page. I'll try to get two pages. But it doesn't help that you have British guys with French names and French guys with some of them have.
Sounds horribly complicated.
The Russians have French names. It's very weird. But it is interesting. So
did you read it? at bedtime on Kate's birthday after you got Kate upstairs and into bed?
Yeah. Yes, believe me, I did. So anyway, I'm sure it's fine.